What happens? I turn into an Avenger. I'm able to build a business. I'm people want to hang out with me more. What?
So it ends up that the brain system that I study in my lab, which is attention, is the fuel for our success. We need it in order to think, really make decisions, deliberate problem spaces, learn. And attention happens to be a system that is extremely powerful, but quite vulnerable. So what we see is when we offer people these practices, they're essentially regaining those capacities that tend to become depleted because of demanding circumstances in their lives.
Welcome to the Spartan Up podcast with Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan Race.
We are talking about overcoming obstacles. The same way we teach people to get over obstacles on the course, we will teach you here on the Spartan Up podcast to get over obstacles in your mind.
What if you could build your capacity for attention and focus? Build that strength just like you build your muscles? Today's guest, Dr. Amishi Jha, author of Peak Mind, Find Your Focus, Own Your Attention, joins Joe to tell you how you can.
Do you want to be ready for anything? Download Joe's free ebook at spartan.com/readyforanything. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Athletic Brewing Company and FitAid. Race dirty, recover clean with FitAid Sports Recovery Drink. Visit lifeaidbevco.com and enter the code SPARTAN30 at checkout to get 30% off their full line of functional lifestyle beverage blends and go powder sticks. Athletic Brewing Company. Their innovative process allows them to brew great tasting craft beer without the alcohol. New customers can get 10% off their entire order with the code SPARTAN10. Limit one per customer.
Joe DeSena here, CEO and founder of Spartan. I got a special one for you today, Spartan Up Podcast, where we attempt to rip people off the couch and get them going. I've got Dr. Amishi Jha. You are a superstar. You wrote this book, Peak Mind, and you work with all kinds of special folks, including the military, I believe, right? Where you can help.
That's correct.
You can help people become superhuman. Is that an accurate description?
I would say optimizing whatever we've got within our capacities, using our brain to the fullest.
And so a lot of times I think we believe we are what we are. You know, it is what it is, and we can't really change. And you're saying that's not true.
Yeah, what I'm saying is essentially that just like the body can be trained for optimal functioning, the mind is no different. And that's sort of where the brain science, I think, becomes really interesting, this notion that the brain can train itself to function better. And that's what we've been pursuing in my lab.
How long have you been pursuing this?
Oh gosh, almost 20 years now.
20 years, and you see a tremendous change from you know, I don't know how long does it take for somebody to change their brain? I mean, I know what it takes to build a bicep. I've been working on it forever. How long does it take to build a brain?
Well, what we're finding is that about 4 to 8 weeks is the sweet spot to begin daily practices with mindfulness meditation training. And when we've tried to crunch it to be more time efficient, something like 2 weeks, and this was a project we did with special operations forces, it was too, even for that elite group, it was too short of a time window. So around 4 weeks tends to be the right amount of time where they're devoting something like 12 to 15 minutes a day to engaging in mindfulness exercises.
So 12 to 15 minutes a day is less time you'd have to spend on, you know, your body, right? It's not a big ask. 4 weeks is, I mean, it sounds like a layup. Everybody should be doing this.
I mean, I at least at this point, seeing our data, I would not disagree with you. It's just something that is accessible and doable by all of us.
So 15 minutes a day, 4 weeks. What do I get at? Like, what changes right now? I'm mediocre at best. What happens? I turn into an Avenger. I'm able to build a business. I'm people want to hang out with me more. What happens?
So it ends up that the brain system that I study in my lab, which is attention, is the fuel for our success. We need it in order to think, really make decisions, deliberate problem spaces, learn. So it's important for cognitive functioning, but it's also important for our ability to feel and regulate our emotion. So even experiencing joyful moments in your life requires your attention. So thinking, feeling, and then connecting. So our ability to empathize with other people, to take other people's perspectives, lead others. All of those require attention. And attention happens to be a system that is extremely powerful, but quite vulnerable. So what we see is when we offer people these practices, they're essentially regaining those capacities that tend to become depleted because of demanding circumstances in their lives. And that tends to make all the difference, so that they're up-leveling the ability to think clearly and sharply, manage their emotions better, and connect with other people and lead them well.
It's funny you say that, because when I think about many successful people I know throughout my life, as you were talking, I was thinking back, the folks, I mean, like uber successful, not just financially, but they're really attentive. Like they lean in, they make you think that you are all that matters for that moment or those 10 minutes. Or in one instance, I just thought about a meeting I had at West Point. And this guy's a multi-billionaire that I was with, meeting with some of the brass there. And he gave them so much time. And I found myself fidgeting. And I thought, wow, this must be one of the reasons he's as successful as he is.
Yeah, I mean, we feel it, right? We feel it when people are paying attention to us. We feel it when they're distractible. And in many sense, we can think about, and this is a quote that I really love by Ron Heifetz at Harvard, attention is the currency of leadership. You know, in the same way that I think about it as a fuel for all these various things, it's the thing, if we spend out, can give back in droves. And oftentimes what happens, though, is that as leaders, people that are obviously successful at what they do, succumb to the pressures of the leadership role. Meaning, and you know this from your work with military service members, they're experiencing those circumstances when leaders are called upon to not just function, but to function at their best. Circumstances that are filled with the term VUCA, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous circumstances. Under those circumstances, we know that attention can become depleted. So when leaders go from being, you know, all they can be, having all of these qualities, to really compromise because of VUCA circumstances, their thinking now all of a sudden becomes irrational or illogical. Their emotions become reactive or impulsive in some sense, and their connection fails. They're not able to take other people's perspectives or empathize. So what I've been interested in doing is to help leaders and many other people learn these brain training tools and brain training exercises to keep them on the other side of that equation, so that even when circumstances are tough and their attention is likely to be compromised, they don't become compromised. And then I think they show up like the leader that you just described at West Point. They're fully there. And that feels totally different versus when somebody's not.
No doubt about it. I'm feeling so, I don't know, less than my, you know, I'm not at my peak as I listen to you. I could have been better all these years. I'm so annoyed now. I'm just thinking, if in 4 weeks at 15 minutes a day, you can get to level three, what happens? Like if you do another 4 weeks, do you get to level four? Do you just keep working on it?
So yeah, here's the thing about just like physical activity, the thing about mindfulness training that we know is that even in that 4 week interval, the more you practice daily, the more you benefit. There is a dose response effect. So sure, extending it beyond the 4 weeks is going to be necessary in the same way that an athlete can't, for example, train for a marathon and then just become a couch potato and expect to maintain physical excellence. You've got to maintain the workout routine. But yes, I think of the 12 to 15 minutes a day as an on-ramp. It gets essentially the core systems of attention kind of tuned up and provides the enough challenge that they're functioning better. But then just like, you know, almost like couch to 5K, you might say, but then you can keep going. And that becomes very interesting because the more you do daily, the more you benefit. And it shows up in ways that are maybe a little bit counterintuitive. Right. So, for example, if you think about attention as focus, the thing we notice in people that practice these techniques is not that they necessarily focus better, meaning that they can just decide to put their attention on a particular kind of content and then keep it there. It's that they become more aware of when they're not focused. So they come back with more regularity, more consistency, and more fully. even if they do end up getting distracted and going off task just as much as the rest of us. So I think that's really important to keep in mind as well. When you say, you know, does it make you sort of superhuman? In some sense, it definitely deviates from sort of standard human vulnerabilities. You end up cultivating these qualities that are so important, yet not available to us as frequently or as on demand as we'd like.
The other thing I'm thinking as I listen to you, in this world we're in, my kids are victims to this, like the devices. I mean, my son this morning, I drove him to school and he's looking at his phone and I'm terrible too, but I'm like, hey, buddy, come on, pay attention here. So in this world, people are actually going in the wrong direction. Am I seeing this correctly?
Well, you know, I would say just like any complex thing, there's good and there's bad, right? So the question becomes, why are we engaging with our phones excessively? Like, why does it feel inappropriate to us? Oftentimes, and you know, I ask my kids are teenagers as well. The challenge isn't that, it's not that they don't know this is problematic. And oftentimes they too want to break up with their phone, but somehow can't, right? It's like a challenge to actually do the thing that they know is right. And I wanted to just say that that is not actually a fault of their brain or our brains. It's the natural way the brain is developed. So I think that, and the reason I say that is because over the course of human evolution, we developed an attention system that is so tuned to enticing, fear-inducing, interesting, sort of the sex, drugs, rock and roll version of stimulation in the environment. It draws us in. It was important for our survival. Now we've got a device that delivers that to us, not just with regularity and all the time, but that it's particularly catered to us. And it's not just one or two software engineers doing this. It's teams of engineers that are perfecting this. So we're up against a lot. And if we start saying, well, it's just me, it's my failure that won't allow me to stop scrolling on TikTok for hours, that's the wrong direction to go. So I actually don't advise people to break up with their phone. I think that it's not possible in this day and age, nor would it really benefit us. But what we can do is use these same types of training tools to become more aware moment by moment of how we're using our attention, how we're paying attention. And then all of a sudden, you start slowing down all the entire process. You notice the urge to pick up the phone. You notice that, oh, I'm now holding it, I'm let into my phone. I'm noticing myself clicking on the app. I'm on, you know, I'm scrolling. Usually we're already in 20, 30, 40 minutes and we're like, what have I been doing with my day? So being more granular and allowing ourselves to know where our mind is moment by moment advantages us and opens up all these decision points. So we can say, is this really serving me right now? You know, I got 5 minutes to talk to my dad. Is that a better use of my time or actually looking at yet another video or yet another post? And then if we ask ourselves that question, we can make choices that actually advantage us more and more often. So it's not a counter, it's almost a counterintuitive approach. Not about the device itself or even our relationship to the device. It's our relationship to our mind. And it's the good news is it'll advantage us not only for our interactions with technology, but our interactions with other people too.
You just gave me an idea. You know, all those smokers that went, you know, for 100 years smoking cigarettes mindlessly, right? We had to put on the packages. We had to raise the prices, taxes, and then we had to put these, you know, skull and crossbones on the packages, warning. And I wonder if someday on our devices, when we're consuming, you know, junk food for the brain, because we're not all attentive, we haven't all read your book, there'll be like a scrolling red, you know, you are consuming junk for the brain right now. Or so, like, it sounds crazy, right? A phone company, a device would never do it, but we're going to need that for many of us.
We'll be right back to the interview. But first, a little bit from Athletic Brewing Company, today's sponsor. You don't have to choose between an ice-cold beer after a race and your health, thanks to Athletic Brewing Company. Athletic Brewing Company's innovative process allows them to brew great-tasting craft beers without the alcohol, from IPAs to stouts to golden ales and more. They offer a full selection of beers, starting at only 50 calories, so you can keep your head clear and enjoy the refreshing taste of beer anytime and anywhere. And they're part of a program called Two for the Trails. For every product purchased, Athletic Brewing Company donates 2% of sales to protecting and restoring local trails. They're pioneering a craft brew revolution. You don't have to sacrifice being your best to enjoy a great brew. In fact, check out their website to see a list of awards that their beers have won. Check your local store, but if you can't find it, they'll ship it. Place an order at athleticbrewing.com, and you can get free shipping on 2 6-packs or more. And new customers can save 10% off the entire order with the code SPARTAN10. Limit one per customer. FitAid. FitAid is a clean sports recovery drink. Race dirty, recover clean. You've heard us say it before. FitAid is 45 calories, certified non-GMO tested, vegan, paleo-friendly, certified gluten-free, kosher, and never contains any artificial colors, flavors, sweeteners, or sodium. Even the zero sugar option, it's keto-friendly and has only 5 calories, and it's naturally sweetened with monk fruit and stevia. And then there's FitAid's recovery blend. It has glutamine, glucosamine, turmeric, BCAAs, omega-3s, CoQ10, a full B-complex, and electrolytes. It's perfect for after your workout, your hike, your bike ride, or your race. Can you imagine drinking a plain old soda when you could have this? FitAid is a product of LifeAid, the functional beverage company, and they're an official partner of our Spartan Race series. Listen, each ice-cold can of FitAid, it contains ingredients to help your body recover, and it never contains any artificial flavors or sweeteners. So visit LifeAidBevCo.com, enter the code SPARTAN30 at checkout, and save 30%, plus you get fast, free shipping. Okay, back to the interview.
We are going to need that, and I don't think it's too far in the future. I think that we are now in a position where we cannot leave it to companies that benefit from selling this precious commodity of our attention. We're going to have to demand it as the product for their applications. And, you know, it could be as simple as every time, instead of allowing for the scroll that is a seamless act, if it actually required a click, and in that click, it says you've spent X amount of time on this program. So be neutral regarding the content, because it could be very important content that could actually benefit you. But just that feedback that says, this is what you've been doing, right? It's what we call meta-awareness. It's an external stimulation that provides us with insight into the content and processes in our own mind, in our own behavior. Then we can make a different choice if we choose to.
Yeah, no, I like it a lot. How does this process work with children? Like, are you able to fine-tune kids and turn them into superheroes too, or is it only working with adults?
Well, it ends up that mindfulness in education is a giant endeavor. And it, again, you know, children, it ends up that attention is a frontal lobe-mediated function. And the frontal lobes, as you probably know, are the slowest to develop. We don't fully develop our frontal lobes till we're about 25. And then there's a slow decline between, you know, 35 and then throughout life. So we got a good 10 years where the frontal lobes are working well. And so a lot of times with children, those same types of practices are offered, and they do provide benefits. They provide improvements, objective performance improvements in tasks that require thinking, in emotion regulation for kids, in pro-sociality or their ability to get along with others. The difference tends to be that you offer them in a very different way to children so that they're developmentally appropriate. So, for example, with a special operator, I may say, you know, we're going to do 15 minutes of focusing on breath-related sensations. With a three-year-old, you might put a little stuffed animal or stuffed toy on their belly and say, hey, watch the little bear move up and down for 3 minutes. Both achieve that same ability to keep the mind focused, notice mind wandering, and then return it back. But you're doing it so that it's appropriate and doable for the population.
I love it. Give me two or three things folks at home, maybe they're impatient, maybe they don't have the focus and they're not going to read the book, right? Maybe they don't have time to do a podcast with you, but what could they do at home that's just going to make them better? They put a teddy bear on their belly and watch it go out, like, what do they do?
They can, sure. First thing I'd say is The book's available in audio, so that you can listen to it passively if you choose to. They should definitely check out your podcast, and they already are if they're listening to our voices, so that's always a good sign. But what I would say is start small, just like any successful behavior change. Don't start with 12 minutes a day. Start with what you think will be doable, and then cut that time in half. Do you think you could spend 2 minutes a day focusing on breath-related sensations, sitting quietly, focusing on breath-related sensations, noticing your mind wandering away, and then returning it back? And if you say, yeah, I could probably do that for 2 minutes, commit to 1 minute and do it for 7 days. 1 minute. Feel that win when you do it. And yoke it to something that you do every day, maybe brushing your teeth or having a cup of coffee, so that you really experience the success of doing that. Oftentimes when we just start slow like that can be beneficial, but there's a couple things I'd want to normalize for people when they do this. The goal is not to feel blissful, happy, or in any kind of altered state. All we're doing is checking in with the nature of the mind. You know, sometimes in the book, I refer to this as the find your flashlight practice, because I think of attentional focus like a flashlight. Wherever we direct that resource, we get privileged access to the contents. It's crisper, clearer, and beneficial to us. But half the time, we don't know where the heck our flashlight is. You know, we want to be focused on what the person in front of us is saying or what the teacher's saying if you're a student, but we're listening to our neighbor or we're thinking about a bad conversation we had. So finding your focus is so powerful. And so this kind of phrase of find your flashlight is what we're going to do over and over again. And it's not about not having the mind get distracted. Totally normal. 50% of our waking moments, our mind is not in the task at hand. And that's normal. The brain was designed for that. So if we dedicate 1 minute and then build up slowly to 12 minutes a day, where all we're doing is practicing that activity of directing, of really finding where it is, and then redirecting back, that's going to serve us not just for becoming Olympic level breath followers, because who wants that, but for anything we do, whether it's in our leadership role or our role as students or professionals in any context, we can use that same skill. It's generalizable and it's portable. And so I would just ask people to give it a try and start really, really small.
You know, I do it. My mother taught me years and years ago. I shunned it. I pushed back because it seemed too soft, right? It wasn't going to.
Yeah.
But I did a little bit of it to go to sleep. When I go to sleep, I close my eyes, I focus. And you don't hear people pushing that a lot. And I wonder why, because for me, I could sleep anywhere. I close my eyes, I tune in, focus on the light that I see in my closed eyes, and boom, I'm sleeping.
It really is such a handy way to fall asleep. And part of the reason is, if you think about what challenges good sleep, and at least falling into sleep, it's that mental chatter, right? We're thinking about the past, we're thinking about the future, we're thinking about other people. So just focusing on a target object and having that be the center and only thing we need to do calms all of that chatter down. And then we can allow the sleep processes to occur. Of course, that's not the only reason we do it. We do it because now being able to focus on the thing I want to focus on and calm the chatter that's distracting me away is so useful no matter what. And it's interesting that you mentioned sleep, because a lot of the pre-deployment Marines that we worked with, just like you were saying, they thought it was complete BS. You know, it's like, excuse me, ma'am, you want me to do what? Close my eyes? No, thank you. Focus on my breath? No way. When they tried it, they had a whole new respect, meaning it wasn't soft. It was actually really, really challenging. And part of the challenge was this sort of slippery nature of their own attention. And when they understood that there's a respect to have for the stability of our own mind, they got curious about it, as good service members often will. And then what they realized is that doing this helped them in all kinds of things. In fact, the resistors to our training at pre-deployment, who were just like, no, it's total BS, we're not doing it, ended up contacting our trainer while they were deployed in Iraq and said, all my buddies who listen to you, they're falling asleep at night. They're not coming back from missions with uncontrollable shakes. Teach me that stuff. And they learned while they were deployed and began implementing while they're deployed, to the point where when they came back and we evaluated them, they were better than before they left. And that to me is always heartening. It's like, you know what? Even if you're skeptical, which I was a skeptic myself, if you give it a try, just like physical activity, it's just biology. You will start seeing beneficial effects. So we just have to disabuse ourselves of notions of it being soft or somehow magically it's going to catapult us into some altered reality. That's going to be, you know, rainbows and unicorns, or we're going to start levitating. That's not it at all. It's just plain reality, but we'll have better control of our mind.
That makes so much sense. I bet your workouts, your physical performance, would be better if your mind is more in tune.
That's 100% why we're starting to see it more and more in performance psychology. And probably you know this already, that if you look at most elite performers, they have some form of this type of activity that they're doing. They are already simultaneously using the mind, because they know that when failure occurs, it's typically not motoric. They didn't forget the move. They just couldn't implement because there was a psychological or cognitive or emotional challenge. And so cultivating the mind simultaneous with the body can be so beneficial. And, you know, we worked with the entire University of Miami football team offering them mindfulness training. And it was so interesting because so many of these things parallel the kinds of performance training they get regarding the game itself. So, you know, you might say to a player, scan the field just as a way to kind of check out what's going on as they go about the next play. But scan the field, when we talked about it, became the internal field. What is going on in the mind right now? Are you here, or are you in the last play where you might have messed up or your buddy messed up? So really be in the moment. Check out what's happening so that you're aware of what your vulnerabilities might be. And then, of course, you can use other aspects of the mindfulness training to get your attention where it needs to be in a kind of commanding manner.
I love it. How do people find you?
Amishi.com. If you remember my first name, Amishi, they can find all about our research and learn more about the book.
Where are you physically located? Are you in New York, in California? Where are you?
I'm at the University of Miami.
Okay.
So the Hurricanes was the team that I was talking about, football team.
I'm going to be down in Orlando at the start of the new year, so I'm going to have to find you.
Oh, yeah. Come visit us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Spartan Up. Do you want to be ready for anything? Download Joe's free ebook at spartan.com/readyforanything. Do you know someone who needs a little help staying motivated, staying informed, getting or staying mentally and physically resilient? We're here 3 days every week with a mix of content to help you stay strong, from mindset to nutrition and everything in between. Listen every Tuesday to hear Joe DeSena, Spartan Race founder and CEO, and the rest of the week, join us for DECA, Endurance, and Classic episodes. See you next time. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Athletic Brewing Company and FitAid. Race dirty, recover clean with FitAid Sports Recovery Drink. Visit lifeaidbevco.com and enter the code SPARTAN30 at checkout to get 30% off their full line of functional lifestyle beverage blends and go powder sticks. Athletic Brewing Company. Their innovative process allows them to brew great tasting craft beer without the alcohol. New customers can get 10% off their entire order with the code SPARTAN10. Limit one per customer.